This week on Potlatch, Eliza Winfrey, Mary Moses, Sharon Sunnyboy, and Anna Frank remember the 1967 flood in Minto, Fairbanks, and Nenana. Years ago, the Chena and Tanana rivers flooded Minto, Fairbanks, and Nenana. At Minto, Eliza Winfrey was just 11 years old. I asked her to remember if she took precautions the night the Tanana River overflowed at Minto.
Yeah, my mom and them did. I was just a little girl then, so I didn't do very much except help them with things.
Did they try to move things to higher ground?
Yeah.
Where'd you move to?
We moved on the back. There was a bank, not a bank, but a high, you know, bank behind our house. And we moved behind there. And the water got higher, so from there they took us out to the airport. And at that time the army, or whatever, brought a helicopter and took all the young kids into town with their mom.
Fairbanks?
Uh-huh.
No,
I was in Minto. We stayed there about 3 days, I think, until it got too bad, so they sent helicopters down there and took us.
Where did you sleep?
We slept on that bank I was telling you about behind.
Oh, just out in the open?
Yeah, just in a tent, and we had dogs and everything with us, so.
How was it?
It wasn't fun. It was cold, kind of scary because of the water, you know, the water is high and it's rushing and it looks scary.
Oh, the water was
run.
It wasn't a flash flood, was it? It just started to rise slowly.
Yeah, and then, plus the water is really swift in Minto, in El Minto, and it looks scary.
How's New Minto now? Is that pretty well safe from high water?
Yeah, pretty well safe.
What did you do during those 3 days?
Oh, I just helped Mom and them and put things away, and we rode around the village in a boat, checked on things, checking if anybody was around, and just looked around and stayed near the village though most of the time. We didn't go out in the river because...
Did people lose a lot during the flood?
Yes, very. We had to clean out the... our house, and you know, there's mud, and it was really dirty. It was just a mess. Most of the stuff we had to throw away because it wasn't no good. And some of the stuff we had to sterilize and take care of all that.
What did you eat during the 3 days up on the bank?
My dad and them had food, mostly Indian food we ate, and canned stuff.
You were able to take that food up? A lot of dry food?
Yeah, it was what they had stored away. So that's just what we live on while we were up there. We just cleaned it out really good, and it took about 2 days to scrub the floor and, you know, just mostly try to sterilize everything so it'll look a little decent. I mean, not decent, but, you know, it'll be healthy to live. Yeah.
How much time did you spend in Fairbanks?
We stayed up here about a week, I think. It was just my mom and dad and me and my brother.
Where'd you stay?
We stayed at the Barnett School. Over there, they put us in there for a couple of days. Not a couple of days, but about 5 days we stayed in until everything was okay to go home.
How did you react to... What did you think when they told you, when they decided to move Minto?
No, I didn't have too much reactions to it because I was just a little girl and didn't know what was going on. I remember my mom and dad used to go to the meetings and they were talking about moving us and the people over to the new site, you know. And it bothered me a little. but especially about my mom and dad, because my mom and dad was raised there and they lived there, you know. And I kind of wondered how they really felt about it, you know, because that's where they were raised, and they raised us. And now that we moved to a different site, you know, it's, I don't know.
Well, do you think it's a better place or a worse place?
It's a nice place to live, but I don't know. I'll always remember Old Minto.
You get back there very often?
To New Minto?
Old Minto.
Yeah, we go over there by boat. Sometimes when we go to Nenana, we stop by there. I haven't been there for almost a year now. The last time I was down there was last summer when I went with my dad. That was the last time.
Was anybody lost in Minto? Was there anybody drowned in Minto?
During the flood? No, not that I know of.
How about the dogs? Were they all safe?
Yeah, some of them try to save their dogs and put them, they just move their dogs to higher ground. And I never heard of any, you know, anybody losing a dog in the village. They could have, but I wouldn't know of it. Gordon Lightfoot. Now back to that rainy August of 1967. Mary Moses looks back 10 years.
I was living in Fairbanks at the time of the 1967 Fairbanks flood. I worked for the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which was located at the Arctic Bowl building. And I lived on Front Street in Grail, which is right next to the river. Many of us, although Fairbanks had never been reported as anticipating a flood, many of us who lived in Grail expected the possibility of some water, say 2 or 3 inches of water in our homes. And so we had moved things up, put our valuables on top of dressers and things like that, expecting that we might have at least a good deal of mud come around. But then I went to work that morning with this sort of an expectation. I left my baby at a child care center, and it was before noon that Edward Mayo called me and said that the dogs, which we had there at that time, were in the water, and that we'd better move our dogs, and that he was moving his dogs. So I went home, took some leave, went home to move my dogs. And by the time that I could get my dog team loaded into my pickup truck and move them to high ground, I couldn't get back home to Front Street and Grail. So I picked up my child, and there were some other employees of the Bureau of Indian Affairs that lived in Fairview Manor, and they offered a place to dry up and, you know, get some dry clothes and warm up a little. And so I went up there, and we began to have calls for help, people, other employees who needed evacuation, say from the Hamilton Acres area, or clients of the Bureau of Indian Affairs who needed to be evacuated. So my truck was borrowed by some of the social services staff there, and they began to evacuate people, you know, say from Hamilton Acres, other areas, other lower areas of Fairbanks, and it became high, the water became high enough that they could no longer get over the University Avenue Bridge. So then they began to work on people that were in the downtown area. Then finally it got to where we couldn't travel, and we didn't have transport, didn't have any communication. So they brought my truck back up and parked it on fairly high ground, and we just waited it out. There for a while, the only real worry we had was that the water would get high enough that those of us who were in the upstairs apartment of Fairview Manor wouldn't have any place to go, and also that we might run out of groceries before the water ran down. But basically, it was fairly comfortable. It was just kind of an anxiety situation. Within a couple of days, the water had gone down enough that we could begin to seek out those people who had been evacuated from villages and were staying in schools, or who were local clients of the Bureau of Indian Affairs who were staying in schools. And we began to try to help them locate their family members. Some of the families had been separated, didn't know where husbands or children or wives or were, and so we would try to locate at the various evacuation centers. We'd try to locate where they were, get the families relieved as to where they were, and we tried to offer assistance in getting medication for people who needed it, getting people to doctors who needed to go to doctors, and obtaining medicine for people, say, who had been cut off from medical attention that they needed, and some material comfort, whatever we could arrange. Then, as the waters went on down, we were able to get back into our offices. My particular assignment became to get into the offices and try to help resurrect our office building and get it into condition and try to get our records and things that had been stored under the water level dried out, you know, reclaim as much as we could. Shortly after that, I was able to get back to my own home and find that it had been underwater deep enough that there was just a few inches below the ceiling that weren't touched. I was able to save very little. The floor had been ripped up, big holes in the floor. Couldn't walk around very well, able to take very little out. And so I reclaimed what I could. As I recall, about the only thing that was really salvageable was I had a family Bible and a few records that were stored on a shelf right next to the ceiling. I was able to get those. But most of the other things, the water had just rotted. You know, things that you think you might be able to wash out and keep, the water had just rotted them, and they just fell apart or, you know, ripped up. And so I really didn't have a home much. Just kind of stayed with friends for a while. About this time, the Bureau of Indian Affairs assigned me to go to Nenana and do an extensive inventory of the flood damages to the native people's homes in Nenana. And I spent, I think it was about a week and a half at Nenana doing that. I took pictures, two or three pictures of each house with extensive damages, and talked to people, going over their homes with them, listing the contents and those things which had been totally destroyed, and giving just a, not a price estimation, but an actual physical estimation of what the damages had been on all of the homes of the native people that lived in Nenana. From this inventory, the Bureau of Indian Affairs drew up an extensive report. It was just one part of the input for a report on flood damages in the villages that they dealt with. And then, as my understanding, the ultimate outcome was an appropriation of money to be used for housing projects to reimburse and reestablish the homes, to get houses for the people. At that time, right after that flood, there were no places to live. There just were none. Here in Fairbanks, it was true. I had one child and another one on the way, and just fantastically difficult to find any place to live. Sometimes we couldn't all live in the same place. We stayed with friends. We went through at least a 10-month period of just terrible hassles with finding any place to live. And the people in the villages were faced with the same sort of thing. The houses weren't there anymore. It wasn't just one home that was wiped out. It was lots. And so the ultimate outcome of my report at Nenana, or my activity there, was that monies were appropriated for a housing project.
Tribe of the Southwest. Southwest of Fairbanks lies Nenana, which had a flood of its own, as Sharon Sunnyboy tells us.
We'd had a small flood a couple of months before the big one had hit, and I thought that was it for the year, but the evening before the flood had come was when I'd known about it. My uncle had come over and asked me to move over to his house. He lives on a hill. And I told him I'd go over in the morning, and he said I'd better go now. And after quite a bit of waiting around, I did go over, and the next morning the water was about 4 feet up in her house. So it would have been a little damp. It was so unexpected that all my pictures, which was my main interest, all our pictures were gone. They were up high, but not high enough, and we didn't get very much out of there. Martial law was brought right in, and American Red Cross was there very quickly. There was food, clothing. We did make a trip to Fairbanks one time because it was pretty low there, and we went up to the university and tried to contact someone there, and we did find someone and got some food from up here. Right after the flood, I moved to Fairbanks because our house was ruined, and I moved up here and started relocating.
Was Howard Keel. As old man Tanana ran through her village of Minto, Anna Frank was out of town, but old man Chena was waiting for her.
I was here in Fairbanks. I was working, and they had to let us go early, and the flood was nothing new to me, so before I went to work, I had the kids and the babysitter pack up everything we had.
Where were you living?
I was living out on College Road, and when I came home, we put everything up. We had bunk beds and put all our suitcases and clothes and everything on top bunk and packed all what we wanted to save, packed it up high. And I remember it was right after the Eskimo Olympics. I had my four children, my babysitter, my friend and
her two children, and my mother-in-law. I had a little Ford Falcon. I got all nine people in there and one dog. And they said, you know, just evacuate, get out of your homes, go up to the university or wherever. So I thought, well, I'm going to try the university. The water was coming in over the road by then. So we made it up there, and we stayed there. And it was kind of sad and frightening at the time. And I went through floods before, and it was nothing new. So you just have to keep your cool, I guess. Mm-hmm. I kind of felt sorry for some of them that really weren't used to that kind of living, and had to live on the bare, you know, necessities. But it was all right.
Where did you stay at the U of A?
I stayed up on top of the hill.
Oh. Can't remember the name of
Bartlett,
the
I think.
Bartlett. Oh,
yeah.
One of the resident dorms.
Mm-hmm. We had a nice place.
You came early.
Yeah, we did. And so we got one of the nicer places. But there was people all over, you know, sleeping on floors.
What was Minto like when you got back there? Tell us a little bit about the decision made to move Minto.
Well, we were living here in Fairbanks at the time, but Richard would go down there and attend the meetings. And it was the people's decision to move. We didn't want to. We were hoping that we could get funds and stuff to maybe build it up a little, but couldn't get funds. So in sanitation reasons, we had to move because we had floods there every year. Like we used to have really beautiful gardens and couldn't even have gardens because every year when the ice goes out, it'll be underwater. So we were forced to move.
How about during the 67 flood? How deep was the water in Minto?
I really don't know, but people stayed there. I know it got in the houses, and they put their dogs in the boat and just stayed with the dogs. And very few places. I don't think there was any land or there many places they could go. They just had to stay.
The cabins themselves weren't flooded, though, were they?
They were.
Over the cabin or anything?
Oh, no.
A couple of feet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't too bad. Sometimes, you know, it's hard to get people to evacuate from the village because they've been evacuated before, and they knew what it was like to live in other places, and it was just not like home. I don't care if you're underwater, you're still at home, you know. You could still do things. When the water went down, you could go back to your houses. So it was...
I eventually had brought in helicopters and took people out of Minto
mm-hmm.
after a couple of days.
Those that wanted to leave, I guess mostly the old folks and those that couldn't get around, babies.
What is the impression you get about New Minto? Do they feel it's a... So quite an improvement, or do they just shrug their shoulders? And
it's much safer from the water. It's up on a ridge, you know, on a little tiny hill. And I like the move. Of course, I like the modern facilities. We have running water and the sewer system, whenever it works. the homes, well, I prefer log cabins. They're warmer. But it's all right. I miss the old place, you know, because you were born and raised there and you just don't forget about the times you spent there. But New Minto is all right.
Where's the cemetery in relation to Old Minto and New Minto?
In the new site you're talking about?
Well, wasn't there, the cemetery was near the old place too, wasn't it, Old Minto?
Well, there was several cemeteries. We had one right there in the old village, and we have one out in the flats where people spent their summers or spring, and people died there and they buried them there. We have an old cemetery out in the Minto Flats, several places. And we also have the new one at the new site about a mile away from the village.
Anna Frank recalling the 1967 flood. Potlatch comes to you from KUAC in Fairbanks. The program is funded in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.